Thank you very much to you both. That was mildly depressing fun. So.
Paper for a dark time.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's only no, I will not go further on that. Thank you very much, and I think actually the papers fit very well together because, like, what you marked out as like the life form or the breaking down of life form around that time is then exactly what you have specified in your paper. So one thing I found funny was that Impressionism appeared in both of your papers as like sort of the problem or like the exemplary for what is bourgeois in aesthetics, like the failure of art as a living form. But then at the same time, what you also both spoke about is that what this demonstrates, amongst other things, is that there is no overcoming, there is no sublation. Like Hegelianism has failed, and one lives to witness it still. So one question to each of you, because I thought like exactly this failure of sublation is what you characterized with Einstein's discussion of Bruck and the way like Bruck gets caught up in painting rather than resolving painting. So yeah, my question would be like how would you see that in relation to his thinking about or like obliterating Picasso? Because like Picasso doesn't share that very same problem of like the non-sublation of painting, but for him it's a different form of problem. And for you, the question, because both with Bloch and with Einstein, and with Bloch you sketched it out extremely meticulously, they could both not give up on vitalism, but had to see again and again how fractured it was and how debilitated it was. But how do you see the role of the aesthetic in that? I know at the end of your paper you spoke a bit about it, but maybe could you speak a bit more about like the role of the aesthetic in the holding on to vitalism regardless of its being fractured. So, yeah. Maybe we now go the other way around.
Yes. Even though, as I told Jenny, I haven't read Bloch for a number of years, but even though Einstein uses a different vocabulary, I would say there is a very strong element of vitalism, is that he is against the idea of cognition. Reality is this thing that is constantly in flux, and is one of the reasons why he resists language and why he resists discussing works of art, because language consists of repeatable units, and reality is always in flux. And increasingly, a text that he writes, which I think may have been intended for Georges Braque, but which he didn't include, perhaps because so long, which is known by Gestalt und Begriff, and the Gestalt is really this—it's this reality that is constantly changing and in flux, and that even form, even artistic form, becomes a violation of what he calls Gestalt. That doesn't answer the question you asked me, but it was one of the things that sort of struck me. Of even though they seem to be working in different registers with different notions, that I think there is a link there.
Yeah, I think you kind of also answered my question a little bit because you said violation and so forth. And
can
I
you speak up a bit?
Yeah, sure. I think the role of the aesthetic in holding on to vitalism is, I would say, also not to cede that terrain, to kind of occupy it and pervert it in some ways, so to violate it, as you said. I mean, this kind of vocabulary of Zerstörung and annihilation and so forth. And as this space is still existing, I mean, as you said before, there is no sublation, there is no going beyond or outside. It's just kind of to hold on to it and, yeah, pervert it.
So would you then, I mean, following up from what you just said, would you then say that in a way Gestalt replaces the new? Because you were speaking about the new at some point, and I mean, like where you started off from, the new was already out the window. But the way you have just sketched out the role of Gestalt for Einstein, that in a way seems to have exactly that quality of like being able to pester the field in which you move.
Hmm. Yeah. I like that idea.
one thing I should say is that those of you who've seen the exhibition, and I assume most of you have, might have noticed the Braque etchings for Hesiod's Theogony, which really do look like, you know, automatic drawing and so forth, that Braque's style changes. It's interesting, those etchings are not actually done, finished until 33. They're in preparation in late 32. Einstein, I mean, we assume, finishes the book at the end of 32. Braque seemed his work, and only in 31, and there's a few illustrations, plaster panels that are based on the Hesiod motifs become a frontispiece to each chapter of Georges Braque. And there's maybe four illustrations at the back of the book from 1931, which, you know, it looks like automatic drawing, very elegant, sort of continuous lines, some ways like some of André Masson's drawing. And so, you know, my point is not to ignore that. My point is that Einstein is taking all of Braque's work. He says all of the work since the First World War is basically what he calls romantic, which is really surrealist. And my own speculation is that Braque is influenced by Einstein. They were very close, and that Braque's art changes under the spell of Einstein. And Braque gives an interview in like 34, 35, where he's beginning to talk about hallucination and so forth. So I think it's a case of Braque. Einstein Picassoifies Braque, and then Braque sort of Einsteinizes himself. and so that's an interesting thing. I think there's one other case that I've written about where I think an artist is influenced by Einstein to change his work, and that's someone Einstein did not know personally, but who was very impressed by Einstein, and that's Ernst Ludwig Kirchner. In 1928, when he goes into this weird Picassoid phase that seems to come out of nowhere. And anyway, there's a long story behind that.
Like a Stockholm syndrome. Artists in Stockholm syndrome with Einstein. I have one more question. My problem is that I agree with both of your talks so much that I find it really hard to just say, that's great, and that's great. So, but because you were both, I mean, in your talk, you were more talking about aesthetics than you were talking about art, and you were talking about the debilitation of art. So I think, like, one, I know, very general, but still I think pertinent question also with regard to our present is, in the times in the 30s, which we are speaking about, what you sketched out is a change of what art means, or like what art means and does not mean socially. So in the moment that art is no longer pertinent as an ideal or like a utopianist something, it turns into a symptom. But how would you describe, like the material capacity or like the material relevance, symptomology of art at that given time, like at the 30s or, yeah, at times like the 30s? Because obviously, I mean, even though the writing about art becomes more and more problematic for Einstein, he still uses it as a ground to be disfigured, like you say. So what would you say is the significance of art when it cannot affirm itself anymore?
I touch on this in a glossary entry I did in the catalog on the Handbuch. And I think that what I say there is that the Handbuch opens up a great future for art history, but it's very pessimistic about the future of art. And Einstein basically says, it sounds almost like Hegel, but the context is different, is that it basically art, you know, has come to an end. I mean, it's no longer vital. It's marginal to our existence, and this relates to the comment I was making to Tom and Anselm, is that the way I read the notes for the Handbuch der Kunst and also the prospectus, where the whole thing is very concisely stated, is that instead of seeing a sort of universal history of art, Einstein sees the tradition, say, from the Renaissance up to the present as a blip. Mm-hmm. in the great trajectory of world art, and which it had become an individualistic, solipsistic, purely aestheticized thing that no longer had any meaningful social function. And that's, I mean, what he's going after in Fabrication of Fictions, is that how it just becomes this bibelot. It becomes this toy for the ruling classes, for capitalists, and that artists have, basically, been bought out. That like the thing I read, the senescent avant-garde hobbling along behind the masses. So he's really, as I see it, given up on art. Now, to complicate things very briefly, there are letters that he writes to this Czech collector and art historian, Primarch, and as late as 36, say, oh, you should see the latest exhibition of Braque. The work is great. He writes to Paul Klee in 33, saying, as much as I try, I can't give up on painting. And so there's a real contradiction there. It's a sort of like contradiction I see in Benjamin, who I think is very ambivalent about aura. So there is an aesthete in Einstein, and it's sort of at war with his theory and what he wants art to be.
That's kind of a difficult question. I would say that the significance still relies on it being sort of a problem, or like a symptom, I guess you could say, as something that has to be decomposed or worked through. So in this sense, Fabrication der Fiktion, for me, is kind of totally logical or consequential from what Einstein did before, because if you, if you push it that far, and if you kind of engage with the, let's say, with the romantic subject or with the kind of bourgeois subject position that I was talking about at the end of my talk, then the next step that you have to take is to talk about yourself, or to kind of, push it further. So I guess in art, certain sort of constellations of problems that persist, like the certain subject form, become a little bit more articulate or a bit more clear. So it's helpful for that, I would say. Not as, and you had this wonderful quote about sort of good political intentions paving the road to bad art. So that rang really true and still does. So,
opening up, I would take two questions and then have them to Tom maybe and Susanne.
Doesn't seem to be.
One remark, one question. Actually, Einstein has been paid for curating the Braque monograph. He hasn't been paid by the Kunsthalle, but by Maya Stelin, out of her private pocket. And that is something that her support actually made the exhibition possible, because the local art historians and the director of at the time weren't really in favor of Braque, but not of Einstein, and they were quite annoyed by him giving two longish lectures at the Basel Kunsthalle that nobody seemed to really grasp at the time. And so that's just this is a mark. So, but he got paid, and he was very, very active in kind of mobilizing, activating his the entire network of collectors that he know of, and that because otherwise this huge exhibition couldn't have taken place. But the question on a different level is whether, I mean, addressing both of you, both of your talks, is whether there is, I mean, in Einstein's idea of art and of art history, a strong emphasis on going beyond the visual, this famous and often, I mean, this notorious term that he uses on it again and again and again, of transvisualität, das Transvisuelle, the transvisual, is actually the horizon. I mean, he's the horizon of art that he's also projecting backwards. So that is that the real, I mean, that what art is really about also visual art is going beyond the image, going beyond the visual, going working on other strata of affection, of affectivity, and becoming much more functional in a much broader sense than only through the one sense of the eye. And whether there's, Ernst Bloch in his Heritage of Time, he's interestingly speaking about, when he's speaking about Spengler and the morphologization of history and the becoming visual of history, these attempts at the time to freeze history in images and spatiality and in morphological schemes, isn't this also, this criticism of a particular kind of historical relativism also part of a critique both Bloch and Einstein shared of the visual, this kind of in this kind of larger vein of the denigration of the visual we heard about yesterday already. So maybe there's an art which is not longer painting that that Einstein seems to be taken by without really knowing what this art. It doesn't look like anything because it's transvisual, and this is also connecting to the trance of the former panel.
Maybe we also take Susanna's question, also, which gives you a second to think about this. So.
Maybe I don't have I have a question to the whole conference, but which came out in your talks very well, because especially hearing about fabrication der Fiktion, but also the non-simultaneous heterogeneity of time, contradictions. When I hear especially also the deception Karl Einstein had or the problems he had with art, it's such a, I don't want to make it more simple, but this is the contemporary complaint if you work in the art field. How does it reach the people? Is it completely elitarian? We are totally disgusted with its art market values, but then we hold on to it as a social practice, defend it like rigorously, and artists and art historians alike. So my question to this is, obviously it seems to be like just the flip side of the hope everyone invests, and then you get the flip side of the deception. But the question for me, this is the question maybe also back to Tomer, what if Einstein's deceptions are so easily translated, and on also his comments on liberalism, how art is entangled in the market, is there something you would radically historicize in Einstein, so which is not translatable into
radically what?
Like historical about Einstein.
Oh.
So something which does not translate into contemporary conflicts in the art field. This is an open question, but maybe someone has an idea.
I'd have to think about that. One little piece of information to throw into talking about Einstein when he says the whole business is so revoltingly mercantile. If I'm not mistaken, the only articles that Einstein is publishing in German in the late 20s and 30s are in a magazine called Der Kunstmarkt. 16 articles he's publishing. So he's part of this process. The transvisual is I have a huge text base of Einstein's text. It's a term that appears very late, and I see it in connection with other things that we find in the Traité de la Vision and in the Handbuch der Kunst, where Einstein had believed in a sort of isomorphism of seeing and representation. The first sentence of Totalität, which he says, Kunst bestimmt das Sehen überhaupt. And so when he's saying, art is going to change how people see. What he comes to realize in the 30s, and this is part of the whole crisis, is that seeing and representation are two different things. And the argument he's making, and this also is projected backward into things like early Christian art, is that there is a reality which cannot find visual expression, that reality is more complicated. It is transvisual. It cannot find visual form and visual representation. And I see this as part of the sort of, sobriety that comes about of realizing that the whole basis of his theory is that art is defining reality for us, and that, in fact, reality is beyond the capacity of art to represent. And then the whole project basically collapses. That's how I read the transition.
I was kind of wanting to respond to your point on a shared sort of critique of visuality or the visual, which I think is also a shared sort of materialism. I mean, we have this kind of phrase in Einstein as well of pictorial positivism and so forth, and the metamorphotic is precisely that. I mean, that's how I read it, a response to kind of the sort of limitations of visuality, because it is, it's not hybridity or something like that. It's not hybridity where, you know, the concepts of that which is hybridized remains intact, but it's something, it's form that is temporalized, it's in movement, and that's why it's also much more material. And I think also for the reasons that Charles just mentioned, this is something that became sort of quite urgent or apparent around the 30s or before. Psychoanalysis with Mach, that you, I think, will be talk about later, and all these kind of different formalisms also that kind of, you know, emerged in different intellectual fields, so that the visual just became too one-dimensional, I'd say.
Thank you very much for your wonderful talks. And I would just like to pursue with the question of Susanne, because actually I would like to ask your opinion about a real dualism that exists in the thought of Einstein. Actually, when he wrote the Fabrication der Fiction, it was not the first time that he abandoned art. It was the second time. And the first time was just after, during the Spartacist Revolution. So I think that in his thought, there's really a radical dualism between praxis and theory.
Absolutely.
And for me, this is the Platonic, actually, ultimately, it is the Platonic conception of art in Karl Einstein, because actually, as he has an instrumental conception of art. You know, I mean, you cannot condemn art for not responding to the political mission that you assign it, because, of course, art cannot do that. I mean, he gives really an utilitarian dimension to art, and then when it doesn't work, he says, well, it is art's fault, in a way, you know. And for me, this is, a problem, you know, in Einstein thought. Of course, he's a very, very interesting thinker for today, et cetera, but we have to go beyond this really radical dualism of his thought.
It's a comment. I completely agree with you. The thing, relates to what I said about the road to bad art is paved with good political intentions. And it was one of the things that first attracted me to Einstein, which made him an interesting thinker, is that he was a leftist, but who believed that an art with political agency, I would say, in his case, a very mediated political agency, had nothing to do with political subject matter, for which he had contempt. He was not interested in subject matter. By changing the way people see, you change their hearts and minds. I mean, that's sort of what it comes down to. I think that's a pretty pretty vague note. I mean, and he, you know, he never actually wrote this in the piece in your Gradiva issue, that the very vagueness of this idea is what allowed him to sustain it for so many years. Now, how is this going to play out? And then, you know, the article, you quoted it, the Primitive Kunst, 1919, I think he's very disaffected from the avant-garde. He's working on his Afrikanische Plastik. And this whole idea of the primitive art, it has nothing to do with Africa. It has to do with an art that's coming from the people. He says that das Volk, the people are the artists. And then politics disappears from his writings until the surrealism chapter of 1931, when he starts talking about the proletariat. So this is a long period when he's really not asking questions about how the art is relating into society. And when he's, I quoted the line in George Brock where he says, what we need is a sociology or ethnology of art. Well, that's what fabricazione di ficzione is, and he described it that way to Cremage, and I'm writing a sociologie der Kunst.
Or maybe one could also say that art for him was just not as important. It was just one means amongst many. So in times of crisis where you actually had, you know, maybe become more active and there were actually political fights that you could join in, that was something that seemed more urgent. Mm-hmm. So kind of a yes.
Yeah, I was thinking also connecting to what Maria was saying and what you were discussing, obviously, isn't there a sense in which he kind of paints himself in a corner by indeed regarding, let's say, the status of art as this rare and precious bibelot on the one hand and the sort of more utopian vista of new collective forms by treating those as alternatives rather than as, let's say, two extreme positions that delineate a force field, that actually delineate the social realm with all its actually existing forms of art, with perhaps very tentative or even potential forms of practice. So is he in that sense actually, is he being a good sociologist, or is he being a good anthropologist, or is he actually relapsing into a sort of very binary form of German Kulturkritik, right, in which it's either or, black or white.
I'm inclined to take the third interpretation.
Any other questions? I'm kind of puzzled about the time, because it seems to be we're really well in time. Is that true, or am I mistaken? So we have time for another.
Yeah, well, it's maybe rather an abstract question, because I was wondering about this a different temporality, which was not introduced, but kind of maybe connects to it very well, both to the crisis and critique of vitalism and this notion of the end of the artwork as a political power. And I thought of the concept hidden deep into psychoanalysis, what is only like in recent years termed as belatedness, and this question of, okay, the latency of a symptom and the forms of metamorphosis laying in this very concept, and the shock basically which occurs when you realize what you have actually done, what actually has happened, and the belated restructuring of thought and also behavior and maybe reception of art, and the shock maybe of the belatedness in the sense that you always wanted to be vital, but in the end you only in retrospect see that that this was not possible, and it becomes kind of this yearning. And I think this back and forth might be interesting in that respect.
You're the non-simultaneity person.
Do you mean belatedness in terms of trauma, in terms of sort of an event that occurs? I'm not sure. Did you want to give a psychoanalytical rift on kind of Bloch's notion of non-simultaneity, like a different sort of view on the same problem?
Yeah, I try to understand like the frame you were setting, basically, both of you, in the sense of under the reception of both the phenomena of Bloch and Einstein, as a, and how it might correspond to also this very modern phenomena in or this very modern conception in Freud, and the idea of the belatedness and the latency of how an event kind of travels more and more unconscious and then comes restructured in hindsight. That's what I thought when you were talking about the artworks losing their power in the political discourse.
Maybe that's just another dimension of these kind of multi-temporal or non-simultaneous contradictions. I mean, also happens, and Bloch writes about that as well, how it happens on, you know, in relation to subject forms. So this is, I guess, a way you could sort of push this further or think about it further.
But also at the same time, what you were saying is also true for linearity, no? I mean, it never composes itself other than in looking back at it. So I think this temporality is necessary for a continuation, for an eye which thinks about its own continuation, no? All right. I think we've used up the oxygen in this room. And now we have something surprising. We have a bit more of a break than we were intending to have. Thank you very much again for your papers. Yeah. So what I mean by that is we have an hour break now, and we recommence again at 6 o'clock.